Welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, meet Bay Area-based drag queen Rakim Sakura. You may have seen her on hit reality TV show RuPaul's Drag Race Season 12 last year. She's only the second drag performer from San Francisco on RuPaul's Drag Race after Honey Mahogany in Season 5. Sakura is known for her campy performances and anime-inspired outfits and makeup. She has her own YouTube channel with more than 55,000 subscribers and over 1 million views. Recently, she launched her own series, Rakim Sakura's Sexy Superhero Sickening Spectacular, on the streaming service World of Wonder Plus. It's a mockumentary series that follows Sakura around San Francisco as she searches for and learns about her superpowers. She's here with me now in our virtual studio to talk about drag, her new show and other digital content, life and showbiz during COVID, and her time on RuPaul's Drag Race, and her public reaction via Twitter to the recent spa shootings in Atlanta that killed 8 people, including 6 Asian American women. Rakim Sakura, welcome to Out in the Bay. You're going to make me crack up. I wasn't even looking.
Hello. You guys obviously can't see this because it's a podcast. You know, like, oh, it's just our voices, but we're on camera right now. I just like sticking things in my nose. So I just had 2 Sharpies laying around. It feels good just to hit that nerve in the back of there. But I'm so happy and excited to be on this pod. There you go. Oh, and a highlighter too. You know what? You have to get it ready first. You have to kind of
lube it up.
Yeah. You know, I've just had so many COVID tests recently that it's practically unusable now. But I'm so happy to be here today. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. So first, please tell us about your drag name. How did you come up with Rakim Sakura? And am I saying it right? Is it Rakim Sakura? That's how I heard
it. Yeah, it's Rakim Sakura. It's funny. You say it better than a lot of people, actually. And they've seen the show. So Rakim Sakura is actually a pun on Rakim Sakura robots. You can see right now I'm like wearing a tank top, but I have really big arms. They were bigger before COVID, you know, the gym and everything. But I used to get in drag and wear the worst outfits, just like spaghetti strap stuff, just like this. And my arms would look so big. And I always thought that I kind of resembled like a Rakim Sakura robot. And I also used to only wear pink hair, kind of like a nod to anime characters who are like the main character who have colored hair. I wanted to be the main character of my life. And Sakura is the name of a main character, like the protagonist of an anime that I really like. And Sakura blossoms are very personal to me. They're very dear to me. They're one of my favorite things in the whole world, favorite flower, you know, favorite tree and everything.
Is that a kind of a tree?
Yeah, so Sakura is a Japanese cherry blossom. So if you guys live in San Francisco, there's tons of cherry blossoms all over like Japantown.
So Rakim Sakura, that's a throwback. I mean, how old are the Rakim Sakura robots?
They're pretty old. A lot of people actually don't get the reference now, which as a millennial just almost hitting 30s, it's like it really is something that will kind of date you because it didn't really translate into this like current landscape. Think of it this way. The duality of my name is I'm kind of like reaching out to different generations because the Sakura like kind of like reaches out to like a younger demographic who's really into anime, and the Rakim Sakura robots is something that an older generation might get.
Great. So what is the best way to describe your drag? Since this is a radio show, people can't see you.
Hoping
to put a couple of photos on our site under the description of this week's show. But how would you describe it and what inspired your style?
Oh, it's bad. If I had to best describe it, it's not good. It's terrible. I would say that just like my background right now, you guys can't see it, but an explosion of pastel colors, kawaii cuteness, energetic, fun anime, graphic, avant-garde, overly energetic, and weird. I really came across my drag style from my influences. Like, I wanted to be a graphic designer. Not a graphic designer. Sorry for all of you graphic designers out there, but you're basically living zombies and I hate the job that you do. You guys made corporate art style and I wish that you would stop because I can't stand it anymore. You guys are the reason why that Grubhub commercial haunted so many people. But I wanted to be an illustrator and animator. So a lot of my influences going to art school and my own personal illustration style have influenced the way that I conduct myself in drag.
Do you like, so I've got a couple of these outfits you won RuPaul's Drag Race season 12, right? Most of them.
Yep. All of them.
You want to pick one and kind of like tell me what can inspire that particular one, that I can put that one on our site.
The one that I would love to talk about is this kind of pink one with afros. The pink look with the afro was kind of inspired, well, not kind of inspired, but greatly inspired by like fashion runways from Comme des Garçons. And the outfit was inspired by like a runway that had a lot of Japanese and manga prints. So we were kind of directed to like bring looks that would appear on a runway. So I wanted to do an outfit that was very me, would change the color palette, would make it very pastel. Blues and pinks are my favorite. And I illustrated the pattern, the main pattern on the outfit as well.
Wow. That's impressive. Very impressive. Yeah. So we'll put that one up there. That one's called Spring Look. So I love it. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about Rock'em Sakura, sexy superhero, sickening, spectacular.
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
It's a bird. It's a plane. It's a bitch holding onto her last threads of sanity. I come from a family of super-powered superheroes. My mom and dad fight crime with their powers every day. As for my powers, well, I'm still figuring that out. But when I do, watch out, world. It's the Rock'em Sakura Sexy Superhero Sickening Spectacular! That's what we're calling it, right?
So, the Rock'em Sakura Sexy Superhero Sickening Spectacular. See, I've got it down right now because I've done that opening like 800 times. It is my new show that is developed with WOW Presents. And it's something different than like that they've kind of developed before for WOW Presents Plus series. Most of the episodes are written by me. There are edits and revisions that are done by the team, Jeff and Pete over at WOW Presents. The show is very personal to me because it's kind of like a reflection of my madness during quarantine. And everything is filmed inside my house. Nothing is in a studio. Nothing. There's no camera crews. It's just me and some friends, my partner. I bought a mannequin so that I could have, like, you know, I don't have to pay for an extra actor or anything. And the show is kind of like a mockumentary style television show. I was very influenced by like Garth Marenghi's Dark Place and Parks and Rec and just a lot of different things that have that sort of mockumentary style, Spinal Tap. And I also just love, I love looking like a fool. So this was my opportunity to really camp it up and play a very caricaturized version of myself, like someone who definitely should be locked up somewhere.
So was this your idea? Was this something you pitched or did World of Wonder come to you about it?
So they came to me and they said they really liked me in, we did this Countdown to the Crown series before the season finale of season 12. And they loved me on camera so much. They're like, we have to get her for some sort of show. So there were a couple of ideas that were thrown out for the concept. They had thrown me this superhero concept and I had thrown them a couple of other ones. I was like, oh, what if we did like something with like a nerd fashion review, which I already have on my YouTube channel now. So that idea wasn't lost. And my other idea was a kind of a podcast style true life recreation, but with Dungeons and Dragons. And we thought that the superhero idea would reach a broader audience. And they had originally suggested a style that was more akin to like, where I would just do random shit. But being an like under and over preparer, I kind of made a script and an outline to make it more of a mockumentary style.
Right. Okay. Well, it's fun. And what's the premises of it is that you are trying to find your superpowers because your parents are also superheroes. And they're like, what the heck's up with this? You know, our daughter can't get it together to find her superpowers. So
it's really just social commentary. Honestly, how many of you out there feel like you haven't found your superpower and your parents your parents won't shut up about it. So
we can all relate then. Lovely. You're hearing Out in the Bay, Queer Radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen, speaking with San Francisco drag queen and RuPaul's Drag Race Season 12 cast member, Rock'em Sakura. She has her own new show, Rock'em Sakura's Sexy Superhero Sickening Spectacular. We're going to get into talking a little bit more about RuPaul's Drag Race in a minute, but I want to talk about something more serious right now. Over the past year, there has been a substantial rise in anti-Asian American Pacific Islander hate crimes in the USA, thanks in great part to our former president that rhymes with chump. As we know, this horrifying trend got nationwide attention after the spa shootings in Atlanta on March 17th, in which 8 people were killed, including 6 women of Asian descent. Soon after that shooting spree, Rock, you went on Twitter telling folks that you'd performed sex work in the past. First of all, thanks for being vulnerable and sharing that. It must have taken some courage to do that. What spurred you to reveal this? Why is it important for people to know, not just that you had performed sex work, but that many people have been sex workers?
Well, the main reason why I decided to make that post, especially being a public figure who kind of like every single detail about your life or things that come up about the past, our current cancel culture kind of environment, it's hard to be vulnerable and say things that especially that are stigmatized like sex work. And the point of me kind of tweeting and revealing that I've done sex work was more to draw to the attention to people that the Asian community right now in America, that this political climate is allowing Asian Americans to face hate and violence and be killed. And me coming out as a sex worker was more to say these people were targeted specifically for being Asian and for being sex workers. That could have been me. That could have been someone that you know. That could have been someone who's never divulged that past to you. And it was really important for me to be candid with my sex worker past, because there's so many people out there with that exact same story who, because of the stigma around sex work, can't be open or can't be like very like candid about it. And they can't ask for safety. You know, they can't ask for safety from the community because they can't reveal that they're sex workers, or they feel like their jobs are in jeopardy, or they feel like their well-being is in jeopardy, you know?
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in this tweet, which is, I never knew a tweet could be so long, but you mentioned in here that you were afraid of revealing your past sex work on RuPaul's Drag Race because you were actually sort of financing RuPaul's Drag Race participation through your sex work, but you couldn't say that because you were afraid they would not want to use you. And you said, you made it clear at the end of your tweet that nobody ever gave you any crap about it, but you were afraid of that regardless.
Exactly. And it's so interesting because the thing that helped me, like, for most of you guys that don't know, like the way that RuPaul's Drag Race, you know, it may portray drag in like the mainstream media, you can't do a full-time job in drag. Like most people can't. It's a really hard thing to do full-time, especially in the Bay. The nightclub scene is not as big, or maybe might not pay enough. Nothing against like the clubs or the club owners. It's not enough to make a living, especially the main thing is especially in San Francisco, because San Francisco is one of the most expensive places to live. But it's one of the biggest thriving places of drag. So, doing sex work was a way for me to kind of like supplement my income without losing time to devote to my art style. I truly believe I would not have gotten onto Drag Race if it was not for me doing sex work, like full time, like truly and honestly. And it's something that I do want to talk about, because if this thing that funded my journey onto Drag Race, if it wasn't there, I wouldn't have been there. I wouldn't have been able to tell my story. I wouldn't have been able to reach the Asian community. So it's important to keep that in perspective too. But also the stigma behind this, we can make jokes in like we can make jokes in the media. We can make jokes on TV. We can joke about hooking or like sucking it for $50. But the truth is that we're not putting a humanity behind sex work or treating it like an actual thing. people don't understand. And it's because a lot of the country is just sex phobic. Like we just don't want to talk about sex.
Yeah. And yet we want to sell everything with it.
It's true. That's such a double standard.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to belabor this point too much longer, but I do want to, you know, back you up on this is that one of the articles that I read after that shooting spree was a quote from the executive director of the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, who said in a written statement that violent crime is more likely when commercial sex is involved and women of color are disproportionately the targets and victims of that violence. So it's not a coincidence. They go together, unfortunately. And I'm curious to know if you think there should be some sort of, laws or expansion of hate crimes to include sex workers as a category.
I definitely agree that there should be some sort of laws that help protect sex workers, especially against hate crimes. I definitely feel like because we're not supported by the law, like we don't really feel safe. And the truth is a lot of people have to go into sex work. It's just something that needs to be done. And by denying them that sort of safety, we're dehumanizing them too. And there was another point I wanted to talk about is I don't want there to be any laws around sex work or like kind of like governing it or anything. I would love if sex work was decriminalized.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much. So a little on the lighter side, let's talk a little bit about RuPaul's Drag Race. Isn't this the guy who runs World of Wonder by any chance?
I thought that was, no, I was going to say, I thought that was Michelle Visage, but.
let's just step back a second and say, look, the business of drag, I mean, it's gotten to be kind of a big thing. And I just was looking up RuPaul's net worth is estimated at $60 million. I guess a lot of the, I don't know how much being a cast member or a contestant on RuPaul's Drag Race, makes one's career, mm-hmm. but it certainly can help. I mean, you've got, I was just saying that earlier, you've got 55,000 subscribers mm-hmm. on your YouTube channel. Yeah. Do you need to get a certain level of subscribers or views before YouTube will actually pay you? Advertisements will be placed in your content so that you get some of that money. And so you got to get to a certain level and then you can, are you making a living now as a professional drag queen?
I'm making enough to, I mean, of course unemployment helps. There is a big distinction. Let me get this straight. There is a big distinction between Drag Race alumni from before the COVID pandemic and after the COVID pandemic, because a lot of drag and making money is physical appearances, showing up in bars, promoting festivals, being hosts in person. And also the art of drag, a lot of queens know how to do it. It's like a physical thing. It's like live drag shows and stuff. And for a lot of us, especially on my season started right when the COVID pandemic happened. So we haven't been able to make any money, like no money from shows. I've actually been very lucky. Well, not lucky. I've been very, I've had a lot of perseverance because I worked hard to get my YouTube content out there, to grow my TikTok following, to grow my Instagram following, Twitter following, and everything. I draw my own merch. I make my own merch, and I have Patreons and all this other stuff. But all that stuff comes from hustling and getting your stuff out there. Typically, Drag Race is a platform to get you out into the public. What comes after, or what is more lucrative, is the way you market yourself and the way it falls into your hand. For me, I personally think that if you do the things that you love and you put it out there, people will naturally gravitate it and enjoy it and ingest it. YouTube never made me money until maybe a month ago. Made me zero, zilcho. So much work for so little, but I love YouTube. It's like one of my favorite platforms. I watch all my content on there all the time. And just recently it started to kind of like grow into fruition. Drag Race isn't a magic spell to make you earn money as a drag performer, but it can help if you're really popular. I went home, for spoiler for you guys, I went home pretty early, which in Drag Race kind of jargon or like Drag Race lore means that you won't be popular and you know everyone will forget you. So I worked my butt off to make sure that I was in the public conscience. For those of you guys who want to get onto Drag Race and want to make a living as a drag performer, it comes with work and a lot of work that might not go recognized by a lot of people for a long time, but it will pay off in dividends if you enjoy your work and you create content that you like. Don't sell out. Don't sell out your brand. Because here's my thing. If I'm going to put on a dress and a corset and I'm going to be uncomfortable, then I may as well make the stuff that I like, okay? I'm not going to be in makeup 9 to 5. I'm not going to be in makeup office space. I'm going to be in the job that I really love, and I'm going to create a cool workspace for me. Mm-hmm. And if you hate drag, just stop. Just get out of there. Just don't do it.
Yeah, right. If you don't like it, I mean, what's the point? Not a way to just, it's not the easy road to being rich and famous.
Exactly.
So the finale of RuPaul's Drag Race season 12 was, and the reunion, I guess, of the contestants, that was all done virtually. So, and you had already done something on Trish TV on YouTube, and that kind of prepared you, I guess, for being able to adjust to this online virtual only content world. What is Trish TV, by the way?
Oh, so Trish TV is it's kind of like a drag art collective with, it's run by Cash Monet and Mama Celeste. They're both drag performers that kind of like are very prominent in the Bay. Cash Monet is my best friend and also helps me with all of my social media. My Instagram posts, takes my pictures, and YouTube content. So Trish TV kind of still lives on in some sense. But Trish was a way for local performers to kind of have that kind of taste of success that Drag Race girls have. It was kind of like bringing stardom to people who don't know how to record themselves or produce content.
So I do want to know what people can find today. What do people find nowadays on your YouTube channel?
If you look on my YouTube channel now, it's a lot of, I do makeup recreations, I do fashion reviews, but specifically of anime and video game characters. Recently, I did a review for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Maybe by the time this comes out, we'll have our review of Guilty Gear, which is another video game. I'm very inspired by video game and nerd culture. Also mukbangs.
Yeah, mukbangs. I saw one of these things. Tell me about that.
I like eating.
Is that something we can talk about?
Of course we can talk about it. I know it sounds weird the way it's spelled. So I have a eating show called The Tuck Bang, and it's kind of a parody on mukbangs, which is just like Korean eating shows where people eat in front of a camera. From an outside perspective, it might be like, why would people do that? For the people that enjoy and love mukbangs, there are people on diets, people who can't afford food. There are people who enjoy to see people take care of themselves and eat. I think a lot of people really enjoy mukbang sometimes with like Korean idols because they like to see that their girls or their boys are eating properly and aren't like starving themselves. Eating is one of my favorite passions. It really is. I like both the ins and the outs of the process. And I was also see, you got the joke. There you go.
As is apparent on one of your shows, the episode 3, shall we say, the ins and outs of eating.
But I was also working a lot when we were making when I was like doing drag full time and like doing the sex work. So I was never able to see and hang out with my friends. So the Tuck Bang was a way for me to get people onto a show and actually just work and hang out with my friends. And like I said, like these videos have like maybe hundreds of views, not even like hitting 1,000 sometimes. And I made them because I wanted to like just hang out with friends and have fun. One of my recent Tuck Bangs, though, I almost choked my boyfriend with a sushi burrito. And I also answer questions about me. So if you really want to know about Rock'em Sakura, definitely watch that one.
Where can folks learn more about you and find your content?
If you'd like to learn more about me or just follow me on any sort of social media, it's at Rockam Sakura on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. YouTube is where we make all of our long content. TikTok is where we make our more like contemporary, fun, meme-y content. And of course, too, you can watch my show, The Rockam Sakura Sexy Superhero Sickening Spectacular, now streaming on WOW Presents Plus.
Why sickening?
Sickening is, you know the terminology sickening, right?
That's the one word that I can't actually hear when you say it because you say it.
Sickening? Sickening? You know sickening, right? You know when something's sickening? It's like, oh my God, that's so sickening. There was actually, on one of the episodes, I did an outfit that was inspired by bacteria and they had to cut it out of the US release because it aired right as lockdown happened. So it aired in the UK, but not here in the US. And I think my confessional was, if my outfit is this sickening, you're definitely going to die soon. So, I mean, kind of glad they cut it out from the US release. But sickening just means like, ooh, I'm gagging. Like, oh, it's so good. Like, I don't actually want to explain it, but you guys can get it.
So as we do, what are your hopes for last question here? Your hopes for emerging from, it looks like maybe we're seeing the light at the end of this damn COVID tunnel. Do you have any plans at this point for in-person things or in development, at least thinking about them or a lot more digital content to come for the next many, many moons?
So I have two tours coming to the UK and I also have a tour coming to Australia in 2021 towards the end of the year. I have an album coming out soon, so I'd like to do a tour with that as well. It's a very new process making an album. Look, I might not be the best songstress, but I know what type of music I like. If you like J-pop or K-pop, you're going to love it. If not, just buy it to support me. I need to eat too.
Okay. We will put links on our website. At the bottom of the post for this week's show, we'll have links to your various, your handles and all that stuff. You actually do have a website, folks. She does have a website, and you can find some great merch there with the flip-flops and the fanny pack. Oh, my God. Sickening.
Yeah. There you go, everybody. If you're out, give them a round of applause.
I'm 64 years old. I'm still learning. Okay. So that wraps it up. Rockam Sakura, thank you so much for sharing your time with us here on Out in the Bay.
Of course. You know, I love the Bay Area, love the podcast, and I love just talking, as you can probably tell. So thank you guys for having me today.
My guest was San Francisco drag queen Rockam Sakura. To check out her digital content, check our website, outinthebay.org. We'll post links to her YouTube channel and new show, Rockam Sakura's Sexy Superhero Sickening Spectacular. That's outinthebay.org. You'll find the info at the bottom of our post about this week's show. On outinthebay.org, you can also hear this show and past shows and share them with friends and sign up for our weekly email newsletter and subscribe to Out in the Bay via Stitcher and Apple Podcasts. Please also consider making a donation there. We'd love to keep bringing queer air to your ears, and your contributions will help us do so. That's outinthebay.org. On that note, big thanks this week to Brad and Richard of Silicon Valley, who've been very supportive over the past year. And I'm just trying not to crack up as Rock is sticking things up his nose and brushing his face with his makeup brush. You look on your taint, you said, right? Comments would also help. No cash involved. Please send comments from raves to constructive criticism to outinthebaysf@gmail.com. That's outinthebaysf@gmail.com. Oh, hey, we're on smart speakers now, too. Ask us to play the program Out in the Bay on TuneIn. If you don't say the program, you get a song, I Left My Boat Out in the Bay, which is kind of cute for five-year-olds. So anyway, say play the program Out in the Bay on TuneIn. Okay, thank you. This week's show was edited and produced by Perfidio Rangel with help from Kendra Klang. Want to join our team? Email us at outinthebaysf@gmail.com. That's outinthebaysf@gmail.com. Our theme music was written and performed by Holly Mead. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for joining us out in the Bay.